We can edit the beginning out.
Okay, let's start then. My name is Shane.
And I'm Steve.
This is the Farmhouse Podcast, where some combination of us will talk about stuff periodically. Last night in the wee hours, I asked a kind of trollish question that I didn't mean to be trolly about JSON and HTML and microformats. And that question was specifically, when would you prefer to serve JSON over HTML plus microformats? And then, you know, it was late o'clock, so we got a handful of people talking at us. And we wanted to expand on that, because Steve and I sort of mostly agree about this kind of stuff, and we wanted to sort of share our thoughts.
Right, and it's sort of the opposite of what most, at least Rubyists, kind of believe anyway. And JSON's becoming more popular in all circles, but like specifically in Ruby, everybody wants JSON all the time, and we think there'd be a lot of value in not always using JSON. So I think the first part of this question is to, ultimately this is a story about cargo culting, I think. So, you know, obviously every programmer knows about cargo culting, but if you don't, it's the story about this island where, you know, the British show up in the South Pacific and they have supply trips, come in with food and stuff. And then whenever they leave, the natives are like, oh man, we can get food from the awesome gods in the sky. All we need to do is build fake runways and fake towers and make some motions, and those like rituals will make the food come. So cargo culting, when it comes to programming, is sort of just like doing the motions of what everyone else is doing without understanding the reasoning behind those motions. So basically, anyone who's building a Rails app in Ruby says use JSON. And when you ask them why, they're like, I like it. And you're like, well, why? And everybody's like, it's better than XML. And you're like, why? And they say, because everybody uses it, is really what it boils down to.
And there's some other sort of straw man arguments, like it's lighter weight over the wire because you don't have open tag, value, closing tag. You have sort of a key name, curly bracket, value, curly bracket, and one curly bracket is smaller than two angle brackets and a closing tag, whatever. But with gzip, that's sort of a non-issue, and in practice, most people aren't sending over the wire such huge amounts of text that that the difference between HTML or XML gzipped and JSON gzipped is that big of a deal. You know, when it's still measured in bytes, it's still small enough.
Right. And ultimately, you have to remember that everything fits into TCP packets anyway. So if it's less than the size of a single TCP packet, it doesn't matter how much less it is, and vice versa. Like on those breaks, which I believe are 4096 bytes, you get like data in those chunks. So if it's within the same amount of each other, as far as that goes, it's going to take the same number of packets anyway. So yeah, so there's that. Now, ultimately, like I still like JSON, so this is not saying that JSON is always worthless, but we want to encourage people to actually think about what they need and what they're trying to do, as opposed to cargo culting, basically. So one of the great things about HTML is that there is a lot of existing tooling for HTML. So if your website or if your API emits HTML like a website, you can actually use your browser to debug stuff, which is really helpful. You can do things like include documentation in line with your data, which is kind of neat. I don't know if that's necessarily always the best idea, but it is like helpful. Ultimately, this comes down to what's called serendipitous reuse. So basically, the idea is that even though I don't design my service to be used in a certain way, by using standard formats, people can accidentally or stumble across, you know, what we're doing and use it sort of serendipitously, as the idea. That's another like check to use HTML, is that there's a lot more tooling than there is for JSON.
Yeah, so that was another one of the kind of straw man reasons to not use HTML, is because my favorite programming language, whatever that is, has an easy way to parse JSON and turn it into either a native hash or an object. And to do that with HTML, I have to use, in Ruby, something like Nokagiri. In other languages, I don't know what, but Java has been parsing those giant XML files for years for configuration. Surely they have good, you know, HTML, XML parsing. And if a language doesn't have good HTML parsing, I'm sort of curious why.
LibXMLT, LibXMLT 2 is, you know, really lightweight, and it's written in C, and it's really easy to link to. So almost any language that has a like an FFI to C can interpolate with it. And that's what a lot of things do. So, for example, I've written stuff that processes this on an iPhone before, and you can use Apple's Objective-C, LibXMLT to bridge to like handle that kind of stuff. So yeah, you'll find a wide variety of support. One area where it might make a little bit of sense is in the browser. Like, browsers do have native JSON parsing built in, but I don't believe there's any native HTML parsing. So if you're
building, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, not like in, if I'm making an AJAX request, right, and I'm manipulating stuff in JavaScript,
okay,
then I can't, yeah, obviously browsers do know how to parse HTML. That's what I'm trying to say, is that like with JavaScript and AJAX, I'm not sure, because I'm a JavaScript noob, if there is an effective way of parsing XML without using some sort of JavaScript library to handle it. I don't know, actually. I'm going to look into that.
The other part of the, there's lots of tooling around JSON but not HTML argument is, that sentence is really missing a clause, which is there's a lot of tooling for programmers for JSON, but not a lot of tooling for, or not as much tooling around HTML for programmers. But there's lots of tooling around HTML for non-programmers, which means people that aren't, that are in your sales department can also look at your API and your API output, etc.
Right.
And also, like, all of us know how to write HTML. All of us can, you know, we could use the like WC3 like validator. We could, you know, use the inspect panel, the, you know, all the like in browser tools for HTML, and we could look at it in our browser. I don't know. Okay, so I wanted to sort of play host here and throw some of these things that people said on Twitter last night at Steve, and to sort of have him respond or whatever. So okay, so the first response was kind of jokey. It was Postmodern Mod 3 said, I asked, you know, when do you prefer to serve JSON over HTML? And he said, when you view JSON as a hammer, but seriously, shoehorning links into JSON collections is just weird. HTML represents links well, which is sort of, he flipped the question around and made the case for HTML instead of against it.
Right. But that's one example. If you're doing hypermedia stuff, and you need to add things on top of JSON, but you do not need to add it on top of HTML because it already exists. There are some good JSON formats that do have links, like collection plus JSON and HAL, but you're not using just straight up JSON when you're using those. So there's a little bit of extra work and education. Developers are not as familiar with those formats as they are with HTML. So that's sort of, yeah, the opposite. But that's one of the things that's relevant in this discussion, even if it is backwards, like you said.
So Wilson Bilkovich, who is a defiler on the internet, he says one of the one of JSON's attractions to me is the dead simple white space story. HTML feels like it brings ambiguity. And I asked him to explain on that, and he said JSON requires that new lines be escaped and all white space outside of double quoted strings is ignored. Whereas in HTML, you can have, you know, white space as line breaks or in tags or outside of tags, and it's also sort of
ignored too, for the most part. I guess if you have a text node next to a sub node, then not always, but like, yeah.
But I think what he's saying is sometimes you explicitly want line breaks. So I want my blog comments from the feed come through as three separate lines with line breaks.
Right.
And you don't always know when to treat them literally and always, right. And so
at the very least, it's more complicated than a simple rule, which is, you know, include them in your strings in JSON and they're ignored outside of the strings. So totally, that is definitely a legitimate reason to use JSON. It is simpler in that regard, for sure. One other interesting thing I should say about this. So Gary Bernhardt was pointing out that about white space and JSON was something I never thought of before. So one of the things that's happening recently with JSON is the JSON patch spec, which is a patch format for JSON. This is useful because you can use it with the HTTP patch verb. And one of the funny things that he was saying is that if JSON had significant white space with new lines between, you know, in the right places, then JSON patch could just be patch, and we wouldn't need to be rewriting a whole new format just to deal with it. And I thought that was an interesting argument. You know, Gary is always half trolling on Twitter, and obviously that's kind of a half trolling statement, but it's an interesting thing to think about is that, you know, white space can matter, and oftentimes our formats totally ignore white space. So, you know, it's just something to think about.
So postmodern mod 3 also later said that he would say that JSON is good for external APIs. Semantic HTML is also good for private APIs, which other JS consumes.
Right. So there's sort of a social element here too, and this is one of the reasons why we're talking about this stuff, is that if you expose your API as HTML, you are going to have people asking you what you're doing because people are familiar with JSON. Now, you know, obviously, if you know either myself or Shane, then you know that like arguing in for conservatism is not really going to make it very far as we're concerned. But there is an element of sharing with developers how to consume an API like this and what they should be doing, which people don't know about. And, you know, in the Rails world, we already did this once with the whole RESTful stuff with air quotes. Like people thought that was really confusing and hard to understand and that no one would know how to consume those APIs. And now everyone knows. So while it is a social factor that's true, I don't think that it's something that should stop this kind of thing. It's just true that there is a little bit more work in terms of like sharing with people how this happens.
Yeah, and then he says that JSON is better suited for passing messages back from the API for arbitrary code to inspect and act on.
Yeah, I think that's sort of your like direct serialization argument. I don't think there's anything that makes JSON inherently better for doing that than HTML, other than the fact that maybe there are more options for HTML stuff than there is for JSON stuff. Like due to that sort of ambiguity that was talked about with white space, there's also a little teeny bit of ambiguity with representing things in HTML, which is a strength, not a weakness, but it is a difference.
All right. If your JSON, this is more postmodern mod 3. If your JSON has the exact same structure as the resulting HTML, probably should just use HTML or rethink the JSON struct.
You know, serialization.
And it's easier in every language to parse and inspect the JSON hash than it is to parse and inspect HTML. Also good to remember that JSON is for objects and HTML is for markup.
Which I think is sort of a distinction that doesn't matter in this case. Especially since with a web service, you're supposed to be exposing a representation, not the underlying object. So sharing objects is an anti-pattern, not a positive thing. So,
and that if you want markup as the end result, HTML is better suited. If you want objects to act upon, JSON.
Right. So. Which, again, I think is bad, not good. So.
Yeah. And so back to Wilson's strain here. He's saying that.
You might be hearing our dog, Siv, I guess more accurately, Shane's dog. If there's panting noise, she just ran in from outside and is exhausted. Your ears aren't playing tricks on you.
Yeah, that's not Steve or I. So Wilson admitted that he was struggling to come up with anything substantive.
I would say it, but I don't know anything.
Substanceful, which he thought was interesting, but that the biggest thing for him was, in general, he doesn't feel like here's my HTML, give me something useful, give me a useful API for it, tools are as good as his JSON tools, which he admits is a sort of minor quibble.
Right, which I think is not necessarily true. If you think about like the web inspector, for example, that's like a super useful thing, and it's useful for JSON, but it's also useful for HTML as well. So I think there might be a lack of familiarity, but there is definitely a lot of good tools.
Yeah, okay, so sort of later in the conversation, Hunter Bridges respondent says you should use JSON over HTML when you want to do robust model code in JavaScript.
Right, which I think is sharing what Postmodern was saying about sharing objects over the wire, which is sort of doing it wrong and creating unnecessary coupling between your client and your server. So at least from my perspective, I don't think that that's necessarily a good idea. There is, you know, people used to say that there is some advantage because JSON is already JavaScript, that it's a good thing to use together, but you shouldn't be avowing your JSON. You should be parsing it anyway. So it ends up being, you know, a moot point, I think, in modern times.
Yeah. So Pete Hodgson, I hope I'm saying that right, who is a PH1, says When the consumers of your API are likely to be seriously confused by microformat / HTML and screw up their consuming code. And I wrote back to him and said, you know, it's 2012. Who's confused by HTML anymore? But again, that's sort of back to the social issue.
Right. You may have people that find it unusual and need a little bit extra help.
Timocratic, who's Tim Connor, says, you know, it sounds like you might as well just use XML. There's lots of tooling around that. But again, the point is, like, use the stuff that's native to the web, and the XML promise of we'll build everything in XML and then transform it with all the XML tools never really came to fruition. So it's still that HTML is like the format of the web.
Right. I mean, as much as I was one of the big people that was into XHTML, for example, and that sort of died because people didn't want that level of strictness. So, you know, I think ultimately with the web, we found out, there's a great quote by Tim Berners-Lee. If I didn't leave my copy of Weaving the Web upstairs, I would be frantically flipping through it right now. But he says something like, consistency was required to be sacrificed in order to make the web scale. And so the XML stuff tends to come from a very strongly typed kind of background. You know, you want schemas and you want these kind of transforms. And the web is much more fast and loose than that, which is one of the reasons why it's more successful. Right. So as much as we get really annoyed whenever browsers render incorrect HTML like some way, right, it's one of the reasons why it's so accessible and why so many people are able to make websites. So, you know, XML is totally useful in certain circumstances, and maybe you do want to use it as well. And most of the things that apply to HTML also do apply to XML, but, you know, it's just like you're not going to get nearly as much serendipitous reuse because things like the browser don't really exist for XML. So,
right. Tim Connor goes on to say that SGML descendants tend to be chatty. Debugging in the console, generally working with that sort of. He says it sort of weird.
Incomplete sentence.
Yeah, but basically, he likes the terseness of JSON when he's debugging in the console. There's fast parsers, less wire overhead, but he's fine with HTML, and he's done a lot of Ruby-based HTML scripting and API calls, especially since we have we used to have hprecot, and then we've replaced it with Nokagiri and Mechanize.
Right, and it's true that if you're looking at the raw output, then maybe HTML would be a little bit more complicated without something that's like pretty printed, but you know, again, Web Inspector can let you, you know, right click on something and go directly to that node. It can let you fold or unfold, you know, whole parts of the tree. So I think if you have like an IRB situation, then yes, the terseness of JSON can help if it's pretty printed, but you can pretty print HTML as well. So I think that's a semi-valid reason.
And for sure. But you can also show HTML in the browser.
Right.
And if it's, you know, decently semantic, it'll look more readable than any like console pretty prints.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, we went back and forth about gzipping, sort of making that a kind of a non-issue because most people don't have truly unique scaling requirements where, you know, the bytes matter. Yeah, so that was the bulk of me, Steve, and Tim. This guy, Tef, T-E-F, he chimed in and said, found the same, you know, that he's enjoyed scraping over API almost all the time, same as Tim.
Like he gives an example of a flight search company that had an API, but it was a terrible one. And so he actually preferred to write a mechanized script to scrape it rather than, you know, using their API because that sucks.
So that was the sort of end of the Twitter comments at us. Did you have any more in your
I don't think so.
Did we sort of cover the things? And so this is sort of fresh in our minds because Steve is always reading, thinking about this kind of stuff, and on a new project that I'm working on, we decided to try this harebrained idea of let's use HTML instead of JSON. And because it's early on, it's easier to make those sort of like crazy experiment decisions before you've invested much into, you know, building the thing. And actually what we're doing is, instead of exposing like a website and an API as separate things, and the API emits HTML, we just have a website. And then right now the only consumer of that quote unquote API is another app that we control. And, you know, part of this sort of conversation admittedly is that so far the pieces that we've built are private internal apps, but I think the same still applies to public ones. So we have, you know, sort of app one that has basically like a feed page, right? Like a blog post, like your index. And that's just our, like, you know, items index or whatever that is, the plural index. And then we have another app that knows how to consume that. But because we used HTML, you know, which is a standard format, and because we used micro formats, and specifically the one called H-entry, which we're using micro formats too, which has kind of this Hungarian syntax. But H-entry is descended from H-atom, which is an HTML representation of atom in XML. But because we're using these sort of existing big formats, we didn't have to sort of invent vocabulary. You know, we just called things what they are in these existing formats. We sort of got a lot for free. And in doing so, writing our sort of domain-specific parser, we also, in the process, accidentally wrote an HFeed parser that's just generic and works for all micro-format marked up H feeds.
Right. So this is one of the reasons to follow standards that other people are using, is because you get this reuse of tooling. If we all have, you know, a certain number of formats, if you use an infinite number of formats, then every single bit of tooling has to be unique. And if you all use the same format, you get one universal tooling, but you don't have much semantic information. So by using this sort of middle ground, you get these kinds of reusable pieces. So that's nice.
Do you want to get into pull versus push on this one?
Let's do pull versus push for the next one, okay. I think, because that's also a fairly long discussion and it's sort of totally unrelated. So so if you've listened this far and you're curious about more stuff we're going to be talking about, let's make that episode two. Episode two will be pull versus push, aka why push doesn't scale. You can tweet at either one of us about what you think about that topic, and we'll talk about it then.
Okay.
Awesome.
See you next time.
Peace.